I'm Algernon Cash, and welcome back to Locked In. As North Carolina continues to experience rapid growth and urbanization, the housing market faces both unprecedented challenges and exciting opportunities. In this discussion today, we aim to explore how apartment builders are adapting to changing market conditions, regulatory environments, and consumer preferences. So let's dive into the conversation. I've got Chairman and CEO of Grubb Properties, Clay Grubb, is locking in with us today. Clay, how are you?
Algernon, great to see you.
Yeah, and live all the way from Venice Beach. So how's the weather out in California today?
It's still a little overcast, but the sun will be out later this afternoon, so can't complain. But a lot cooler probably than it is in North Carolina at the moment.
Well, you know, Clay, for some of my audience members may not recognize you personally, but I know they recognize your product and some of the great properties that you have throughout our state. So I know how busy you are. You're willing and dealing. So I so appreciate you just taking a few moments of your time to lock in with me today and sort of help our listeners better understand what's happening with the apartment sector here in North Carolina. You know, I guess to kick in, you know, I first heard the name Grubb. I used to serve on the Triangle Community Coalition and had the chance to work with a gentleman by the name of Gordon Grubb, who turns out is your brother, and got a chance to know Gordon many, many years ago through some of those interactions. Later on, had a chance to meet you when you started moving into Winston-Salem, which I appreciate. But let's start there. Let's just talk about Grubb Properties, a little bit of history around Grubb for members of my audience that may not be as familiar as I am.
Yeah, well, Grubb Properties, we've got a rich history. In fact, Gordon and I's great-grandfather built one of the first steel and concrete high-rises in North Carolina back in 1909, which is on the corner of Salisbury, known as the Plaza today. And it's still, I think, the tallest building in Salisbury today, 100 some years later. But my dad actually started this business in 63 as a home builder in redline neighborhoods. And so back, between 1934 and 1968, 98% of every federal mortgage in America went to a white family. And so there was really blatant federally driven discrimination in the housing sector that I think has had a material impact on, you know, net wealth today, because home ownership is really the ticket from, you know, lower class to middle class, and having cut, you know, a huge portion of the population out of that opportunity it's been devastating to our country and obviously to those families. And so we have a rich history, and my dad saw that as a business opportunity and a way to have impact. And so we actually financed those homes for those folks to purchase without any markup to whatever our financing cost was at the banks. Mm. And my joke always was Wade's able to justify a not-for-profit finance division because he broke all the child labor laws. And so Gordon and my other brother, George, and myself, we all grew up working in the business and helping out. And they did a lot more of the manual work. And I ended up more in the office on the collections and doing amortization schedules by hand. And I apologize. It sounds like it's trash day. So hopefully that's not coming through.
No, it sounds perfect on our end. We didn't hear. Yep.
Great. Okay. Well, they're about done. So. But we all kind of grew up working in the business. Gordon decided that he really wanted to just focus on the Raleigh market and went out on his own. Started Grubb Ventures, but yet he's still, you know, a partner in every single asset we own. Mm. And we've really focused Grubb Properties today on our Link Apartments product, which is, we felt like, there's going to be a real need in these urban markets for housing that these young folks can afford. 80% of millennials can't afford the median price of a new apartment in America today. And so, but yet they want to live in these urban areas where the opportunities are and entertainment and all those things. And so we've really focused Link Apartments on that. And that's what we're focused on today. And what we've done in Winston-Salem, I think we now have about 800 of those Link Apartments in downtown Winston-Salem.
Well, congratulations. You all have certainly carried the mantle from what your father started. So big congratulations on the growth and the impact that you all have not only made up to this point, but also continue to make with some of the projects and opportunities you take on. You and your brother obviously both are fairly deep and well-known here in North Carolina. You know, one of my first questions to start off is, you know, what are some of the current trends that you're seeing in the North Carolina housing market, particularly in terms of demand for apartments versus single family homes?
Well, you know, it's interesting. North Carolina is, you know, blessed with a really great environment. You know, we have a more stable political environment than most, where we've got a balance with, you know, Republican legislation and Democratic governor. We have Raleigh and Charlotte that are two of the most desirable, you know, fastest growing markets in the world on a consistent percentage basis. And then you've got, you know, beautiful options like Asheville and Boone and Wilmington and the Outer Banks. And so we just are a really rich place to live from a quality of life standpoint. And so that has made us very attractive, especially along kind of the 85 corridor, kind of Charlotte up to Raleigh. And so that's put a lot of pressure on housing, but we've responded. And so, you know, Charlotte, you know, probably 10 years ago or so, broke the 100,000, you know, apartment market threshold, which we thought was going to be, you know, take forever and may not be achievable. And, you know, we're on track this year to probably break the 200,000 mark. And so there's a lot of housing. A lot of that's been driven by the mass transit that Charlotte's invested in. You take the blue line through South End. It was really interesting. That was hotly contested to have a light rail system in a smaller town like Charlotte. But quickly South End and that edge of downtown actually became the fastest growing multifamily submarket in the world. Following that for a couple of years, and you can see it today. I mean, we now have 20-story multifamily buildings in an area that, you know, I remember my first business lunch in Charlotte, went to Price's Chicken Coop and actually sat on the railroad track, and it was a completely different neighborhood back then.
No, there has been not only a lot of changes throughout Charlotte, but obviously just changes all around North Carolina. And it's starting to feel like that some of that impact is actually coming right here to the central part of the state. You know, it feels like for the longest, Charlotte has been on a tear. The Raleigh region has been on a tear. And then finally, with some of these large scale job announcements that's starting to happen here in the central part of the state, down and around Lexington and over in Randolph County and Guilford and others, we're also starting to see a tremendous amount of growth finally here in the Triad area. So North Carolina appears to be one of the brighter spots across the country. Now, I will take issue with at least one thing you said. You said we had a fairly stable political.
stable was not probably the right word, but more balanced.
It is more balanced.
It doesn't feel that way, you know, when you're in the thick of it. And certainly, I mean, you know, the bathroom bill was devastating for the state of North Carolina. And, you know, we personally lost over $10 million worth of leases as a result of just that single legislation.
Wow.
And so it was, you know, we're not without our issues, but I would say we're fortunate in that we've got a lot more balance than probably 80% of the other states in the country.
I just, I just pray that as we move through this next election cycle that we're in the middle of right now, that some of that balance actually remains, because I do think we've got such a bright future here in North Carolina. And if we can just stay out of our own way, the next 8 to 10 years could be really interesting for people like yourself and myself, in terms of what we do in the real estate business. I want to shift towards affordability. We talked about the demand for apartments versus single family. Obviously, housing affordability is a major issue across the entire country, not just here in North Carolina. It's the number one polling issue in North Carolina is housing affordability. How are your companies being Grub Properties addressing affordability in your respective markets, and which strategies have been most effective in providing affordable housing options?
You know, it's interesting. It's a simple economics 101 issue. It's supply and demand. And the reality is we have not built enough supply coming out of the global financial crisis. And a lot of that has to do with policy and regulations. And we finally started ramping up the supply side coming out of COVID, just in time for the Fed to shut that down completely. I now have 12 projects that we were on the verge of starting that we've just completely stopped. And, nothing new is moving forward really anywhere in the country. I think starts will be down 70% this summer. And so it's going to make housing affordability, its housing affordability crisis is going to get substantially worse over the next several years. And it's going to cause significant inflation, which is, crazy that, the Fed is so caught up in their short-term inflation numbers that they're actually creating significant long-term inflation. And so it's a real problem. And so we really need to figure out how to get more policy to support housing. From our standpoint, what we've just tried to do is be the most efficient as we can possibly do. There's been a number of companies that have done really wonderful jobs in kind of more rural, suburban areas where they, built the same two, three, four floor plans over and over again, done it really efficient. And usually those are two, maybe three story buildings with surface parking lots. But there really hasn't been a company that's tried to do that same thing in the urban markets. And so we've decided that that's what Grub Properties is focused on. So about 12 years ago, we decided, okay, we're going to do this in urban markets. We do just six floor plans. I'll argue they're the six most efficient floor plans you'll find in the country. I use the example of one of our latest projects. There was a luxury apartment community catty corner to us, and same contractor. They started a year ahead of us, and we finished ahead of them. And the reason was because we built less parking, we built a much more efficient product, and overall, our cost was $50,000 per unit less than theirs. And so we can charge about $400 less a month in rent. The other thing we try to do is we try to encourage people to get out of their cars. The average American spends over $10,000 a year on their car, but I have to spend over $3,000 a year housing a car. So I can charge $3,000 less rent if I don't have to house your car. Well, if you can save $10,000 by not owning a car and $3,000 in rent, and you're making $50,000 a year, it's a pretty significant change in your economic mobility. And so we've got a project in Charlotte right now that's going to open at the end of the year that mandates you can't have a car. And so as a result, 50% of that property will be set aside for folks making below 80% of median income. We also work with a group called Lotus, and that is based in, has Charlotte and Raleigh, as well as Justice United in Orange County, where we actually will rent apartments at a market rate rent, the most competitive market rate rent we can provide. And then they release those apartments. Or in some cases with Lotus, we sign the lease directly with residents that are making below 30% of median income. And so we don't have a lot of that. It's more pilot programs at this point. But one of our goals is to continue trying to roll that out and into more of our properties. But we've got two that are participating at this point.
You know, I want to rewind back to something you said around just the supply demand issue and drill down a little bit further on that. I think we made a huge mistake back in, 2009 or so, when we just turned the spigot off altogether when it comes to land development and housing development. I mean, we just went so long without building anything, so long without developing any land. And it not only seems like the financial institutions were at the cause of that, because they obviously started to withdraw any capital available for development. But you also had a regulatory framework that really made it difficult to develop and build, coming out of the Great Recession. Do you think that there are other regulations that you found particularly challenging or even beneficial here in North Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, it was really frustrating coming out of 08, 09, because we went from, if you had a credit card, you could get qualified for 6 home loans and you could try to flip those. And, I said, and had a lot of fraud in the system. People cooking books on appraisals and trying to do all this stuff. And it wasn't the average homeowner that had anything to do with the global financial crisis. In fact, it was interesting. JP Morgan did a study during the crisis, and whether you had equity in your home or not had no impact on whether you made your mortgage payment or not. If you owed $400,000 on your home, and your home was worth $500,000, but you didn't have any cash, you didn't make your mortgage payment. But if you had $400,000 on your home, but your home is only worth $250,000, if you had cash, you still made your mortgage payment because you cared about your credit. And so it's the same with, we have 100 million renters in America that pay their rent timely every single month. And so this whole concept that you got to have equity, I remember, the CEO of one of the major agencies is like, hey, we provide home loans to those who can afford them. And I'm like, oh, so basically you're cutting 80% of America out of the home opportunity business as a result, and that opportunity to build equity. And so that policy really got ingrained, and it's not unusual. The pendulum always overswings in regulation, went from, hey, if I can qualify for a credit card, certainly I can qualify for 6 home loans, to, Ben Bernanke got turned down on a $600,000 home loan and couldn't get one. But yeah, he was making $200,000 a speech. They said, hey, you don't have 2 years of steady income, so you don't qualify for your home loan. So that's where we went in America. And we still haven't gotten quite back to, hey, hardworking Americans deserve access to home ownership. And despite being in the rental business, that's a real passion for me. We have a lot of pilot programs, and, I will, recognize Winston-Salem for the work they've done in promoting, housing downtown and making it more affordable. The work they did with Wake Forest and the Innovation Quarter really, really changed downtown Winston-Salem, and why the reason we came back and started investing in downtown again. And have a property over by the ballpark, have a property in the Innovation Quarter, have a property on 4th Street in the center. And it's really interesting, like the one on 4th Street, Winston-Salem worked with us so that we could use the existing office parking deck across the street to park our resident at 4th Street property. So that saved us probably $30,000 per unit not have to build that new parking. And so, you know, I want to say a lot of our markets have gotten a lot more innovative on the parking and allowing folks to build less and less. And that allows for more density in our urban areas, which also provides more affordability. And so I think that, you know, from a local municipality level, we're fortunate that most of our markets are quite accepting of or realizing that, hey, we need to be in the housing business and help and support it, whether that's Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Winston-Salem. You know, yeah. You know, you go to like a market like Atlanta, where they've divided Atlanta up into a dozen little cities, and each one's its own little fiefdom, and they don't coordinate that, and it's a disaster. And so, you know, a market like Dunwoody that has, you know, more office space than probably downtown Charlotte, has only had like one apartment community built in 10 years. And so traffic congestion is just out of control because nobody lives where they work. And so everybody has to commute. And so we've been very fortunate in North Carolina with that. And, you know, from a state level, you know, I know they've attempted to do some things, but, you know, I really haven't seen the state get heavily involved in it. And it'd be great to see more involvement at the state level.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I do think some of the local municipalities from a regulatory perspective here in the last maybe year or two, they've definitely become, you know, like they've become more online and understanding, I think, the needs of the real estate development community. And I think they can now also see the clear pain that's being caused within their community when development stops and you don't have this sort of natural flow that happens. It's funny because I think even people within the communities also recognize the need for more housing. I mean, they see what their neighbors and friends are going through in terms of housing affordability. Everybody believes that we need to bring prices down. You and I agree that in order to do that is by adding more supply. But then you also run into this NIMBYism. Everybody says we want growth and we want the local economy to expand, but we just don't want to do it here in our backyard. How do you balance the need for new housing with the concerns of some of the existing community?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real struggle. You know, and I give a shout out to Derwin Montgomery there in Winston-Salem. You know, he was probably, you know, one of the most liberal progressive council members we've encountered. And yet he would be the first to pick up the phone and say, hey, how can I make your project more profitable? And I'm like, that's a weird question. And he's like, look, if it's more profitable, you'll do more of it. And we'll get a lot more housing. And so like my construction guys will tell you Winston-Salem is their favorite market to build in because they're responsive, you know, and saying, hey, we got an issue here in the field. They're like, all right, what can we do to come help you fix it? You know, I remember, you know, I'll pick on Chapel Hill. They've gotten certainly significantly better. But, you know, 20 years ago, Gordon and I were building a road behind the Lowe's, and the inspector comes out and he's bragging about how he's had the Harris Teeter shut down for four straight months mid-construction. And he thinks that that's a good thing. Well, that puts a developer out of business. And I mean, I remember talking to Gordon going, hey, life is too short to build in this town. Let's not build the apartments we were planning to build. And we didn't. We sold the site and let somebody else deal with that. And, you know, and now, you know, I'm finding myself building in Chapel Hill a lot. And they've been very fortunate. The previous mayor was very understanding of how important it is once a project's underway that it gets finished. And get finished timely. I mean, you shut down a job mid-construction, you know, it can easily be as much as $10,000 or $20,000 a day in cost. And so 4 months later, you know, you're probably putting that company out of business. And so then the very best companies just steer clear of your municipality. And so it's a really interesting thing. And but I mean, I think there's a lot, you know, I mean, we were lucky. We had a big job in Charlotte that, you know, we were halfway through construction and we're missing a permit. Called the head of building inspections and he's like, Clay, I can't help you with that specific permit. But I tell you what, if you file for a superstructure permit that allows you to at least keep going without the MEP piece of it, I can improve that. And we can probably improve that in 48 hours and keep you from ever having to stop a single day as we work through the, you know, electrical and MEP pieces of that that are just going to take longer. And so I think there's a lot of that where people need to understand that, you know, it's important that, you know, we focus on efficiency and that's what's best for everybody. And we put the density where people don't have to be in cars. And, you know, and I'm a big fan of like scooters and these bikes and everything. And, you know, I go to like a town like Chapel Hill that doesn't even allow scooters. And I'm like, how do y'all not allow scooters? Now I understand it's a nuisance for a lot of people, but at the end of the day, it gets people out of cars and it's all about, you know, other mobility options. And so, you know, I think there's a lot more yes in my backyard today, but there's still not enough, you know, and, you know, I look at like University Boulevard in front of the University of Berkeley, you know, they've gone from kind of like Franklin Street where they just clamped down and said no new growth. And now they've got a half a dozen 20-story buildings going right there. And I think about what Franklin Street could be in Chapel Hill. I mean, you know, 200 years ago, it was probably one of the best streets in America. You know, a few years ago, it probably didn't make the top 2,000 streets in America because we really had smothered it and not allowed it to continue to evolve. And I think density plays a big piece of that. And, you know, NIMBYism is a big issue. But I think we're starting to see some movement in the other direction. And actually, we're definitely seeing it more and more. But it's interesting, like California, where I am right now, is the most pro housing development state in the country, which is hard to imagine because California was the opposite forever. But now, you know, if you don't build a certain amount of density in your community, the state takes away money. You know, they take away funding. And so, like, we just had a site approved in Santa Monica. It took us a year and a half to get approved for 60 units. The day we got the approval, they called us and said, hey, if you'll just resubmit, we'll change that to 100 units. And they did that over a 4 or 5 month period. Berkeley did the same thing. We had 162 units, took us over 2 years to get that approved. And they said, oh, if you'll resubmit, we'll bump that up to 230 apartments. Because we need density.
No, I think that's great. And I mentioned earlier my service on the Triangle Community Coalition board, and I can remember during those years, Cary basically just shut development down. I mean, they just did not want people building in town, and they made it so difficult that all the developers ran away. They all left town. And then they started seeing that tax base constrict, and they didn't have as much money available for all those important public services that are so critical to voters and residents and people that live in that community. And they had to come back and open development back up. So I do like to remind folks that, you know, this type of development and growth really pays for itself. And, you know, that tax base is what funds so many critical and essential public services. And if you don't have an expanding tax base, if you don't have new growth, it can be very difficult for a community to keep up. I will also add, Clay, also for you and my audience, Representative Jeff Zinger, who is a member of the North Carolina General Assembly, he has really been out front in terms of some reforming regulations at the state level. I know he had a bill that goes into effect, Clay, on July 1st that now every community in the state has 45 days to issue a permit. And they've got to hit that 45-day time limit. He's also doing some things related to changing some things around zoning and some other things. So I think Jeff Zinger, who is a home builder, he's from the real estate community. He has really taken the mantle down in Raleigh in terms of trying to make an impact and change some of the ways that we do business here. And if you did, if for my audience, if you missed it, go to Carolina Journal. I just wrote an op-ed about the new regulation that's coming into effect on July 1st. Go check that out. Clay, as I get ready to wrap up, I'm down to my last question. I guess, you know, share with me and the audience, what's the future outlook for Grub Properties? What's the next 5 to 10 years look like?
Well, we got to get through the next 5 to 10 months before I can do anything, because it's been brutal with a 2,000% increase in interest rates, you know, have really, you know, resulted in about 25% drop in the value of apartments nationally. And so today, for really the first time since probably 2010, 11, 12, coming out of the global financial crisis, you can actually buy apartments cheaper than you can build. So it makes building very difficult. Now, I don't think that's going to stay the trend, because we're short in America over 4 million homes at the moment. And we create more households every day than we create homes. And the reality is, as you talk about the millennials being this bulge in demand, there's actually more 17-year-olds born in America than any other age group in the history of America. And so that is the peak of the population that's coming through. So they haven't even gotten to the point where they're just entering college. And so really kind of the pig in the python is 17 to 31-year-olds in America right now. And that's bigger than the baby boom. And they're going to create a lot of demand. We're building for them. Our core renter was the 29-year-old female. And today our core renter is the 31-year-old female, because they're not able to graduate from rental housing to home ownership anymore because of these high interest rates and high home prices. So we're seeing that age shift. So we think our Link apartment product has got a lot of demand, and we're currently, New York is the one market where you can make the numbers work, because they haven't had any new housing built since before COVID. They really got shut down and everybody thought they were dead. And so we're building there. We've got two buildings that we just topped out a building in Long Island City. And we're doing stuff out here, but we have to do a lot more in North Carolina as well, and have a lot more planned at Glen Lennox and Chapel Hill, and we'd love to, do a second phase of our 4th Street property in Winston-Salem if we could ever get the numbers to work.
Well, Clay, again, I started out by thanking you for your time. I recognize how active you are, everything you have going on. I appreciate your time. I appreciate the impact that you're making, not only here in our state, but attempting to make nationally as we tackle that 4 million deficit in homes that you just mentioned. And I'm sure my audience also appreciates the insight that you just provided about what's happening with housing, not only here in North Carolina, but really at a more macro level, at the country level as well. And to my audience, I appreciate you. I always appreciate you tuning in and locking in with me. Make sure you continue to stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that's where you can lock in with me. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you subscribe to the podcast. You can always download that on Spotify, Pandora, Apple, wherever you get your favorite podcasts, you can lock in there. Until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In Podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.